fuck you! Australia! Germany!
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and the microphone fun starts already. we're broadcasting. I'm going to take that as a win. But it is. It's a little over a minute past the hour, on the way to 2 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And I have been wrestling with the production computer for ever since the program ended last night and pretty much all day long. Oh joy. But you know, the fact that I'm being told you're on and hear you loud and clear, Bob Kincaid, on FYI Nation until 8:30 p.m. Eastern, when we I'm beginning to feel kind of unloved with this being preempted 30 minutes before the debate starts business, I gotta tell you. Yeah, oh well. But anyway, there's a Democratic pageant tonight at 9. And I'll probably sit and watch it like everybody else will. It should be more than a little bit interesting, I suppose. Oh, now that's just cruel. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says, "You're whining like a Clinton supporter, fella." All right, that's enough of that. No more whining. Nope. Let's see here. So this is the 11th of February, 2016. This program is live, and with any luck at all... thank you, Tim. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, okay, we're done with that part. I would forget otherwise. You would think I wouldn't, but I would. It's we're in the teeth of winter here. And it has been it's been pretty ugly cold. We've managed to get the fabulous Horn broadcast studio all the way up into the 50s today. And that's quite an accomplishment too, I can tell you. The weather does not look too well. It'll get better. After Sunday, but Saturday night I am not looking forward to. Nope. Tonight's low 10, tomorrow's low 9, Saturday's low 0, and then we start climbing back up a little bit as we go into the middle of February. I know, shut up. I'm probably whining like a Clinton supporter again. And we get a few days of this. It's just a matter, it's more a matter of preparedness and ability to sort of ride it out. But ride it out we shall. See, there we go. Out in Hooterville, 8 degrees in the morning, says Carol Baker. 65 by, next Friday out that way. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been an interesting day in Lake Bagger Be Gone. Did you listen to any of that business? I'm not going to replay it. Don't worry. But oh my God, the hysterics of the weird little Bundy baggers. No, my feelings are quite unhurt, Carol. I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. No, that doesn't work either now, does it? Mm-mm. No, I'll be here. Yeah, well, thanks so much. 81 degrees in Austin. Ugh. Let's see, in Shreveport, sunny and 76. Oh, sure, rub it in. Go ahead. I don't care. I'll be okay. I'll just sort of put on another layer of... You ever slept in a winter coat? It's big fun. No, but no, a lot of fun last night. I'm sorry, reality television. The one thing I worry about with the final end of the dumbass Patriot vanilla ISIS hee-haw caliphate y'all Qaeda standoff. There's not a producer of reality television out there who could touch that. And I'm scared to death that they're going to get contracts to go and, attack a federally protected duck pond. And then it'll just be a regular television show at 8 o'clock on some godforsaken cable channel. Maybe the same ones that run the duck doofuses. Oh, okay, now Tracy, the lady cab driver's in on the act. Sending me a picture of the outside temperature from inside her cab. 88 degrees in Southern California. Yeah, boy, I tell you. So we're gonna. Oh, let's see. Where is that? Because I did. I read it and I thought it was big fun. The Clive and Bundy complaint. Because, Cloven got taken down when he went to support the occupation. Carol Baker has the complaint over on her page. Let's just see what the United States District Court, District of Nevada, United States of America plaintiff versus Cliven D. Bundy defendant. That has a nice ring to it. Ooh. Now, by God, they might not throw the book at the Patriots there at Mahler, but they threw at least a small pamphlet at Cloven. Yeah, this is special. Violations. 18 U.S. Code 371, conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States. 18 U.S.C. 111B, assault on a federal law enforcement officer. 18 U.S.C. 924C, use and carry of a firearm in relation to a crime of violence. 18 U.S.C. 1503, obstruction of the administration of justice. 18 U.S.C. 1951, interference with commerce by extortion. 18 U.S.C. Section 2, aiding and abetting. Well, well, our Cloven has been a busy boy. You see, that's the problem with America. We have entirely too many laws for a free people, especially laws like assault on a federal law enforcement officer and use and carry a firearm in relation to a crime of violence. How in the hell are you supposed to commit a crime of violence if you ain't got no goddamn gun? Really? Really? And aiding and abetting? Cloven Bundy is a good God-fearing, upstanding, Book of Mormon-believing, Kolob Christian, and he ain't allowed to be abetting. He can't even holler heads nor tails in a coin toss. Abetting is forbidden under the Mormon religion. Oh, this is fun, though. Count one. Conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States, beginning in at least March 2014 and continuing to on or about the date of this complaint, in the state and federal district of Nevada and elsewhere, Cliven D. Bundy, he gets all caps, Cloven does, defendant herein did conspire, confederate, oh, I think they just kind of had to throw that Confederate part in there, just for the piquancy of it. And agree with others to commit an offense in the United States, to wit, assault on a federal officer, use and carry of a firearm during in relation to a crime of violence, interference with commerce by extortion, obstruction of the administration of justice in violation of Title 18 U.S. Code, Section 1503, in furtherance of the conspiracy, defendant Bundy and other members of the conspiracy committed, attempted to commit, and caused to be committed the overt acts described herein, and all of those comprising the offenses charged in counts 2 through 6. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Mike Arnold, the lawyer of dubious talent out in Portland, says this is all just a bunch of hogwash. Well, it would be hogwash if Cliven Bundy could be persuaded to pay to have his hogs washed, but he probably insists on having the United States government wash his hogs for him for free. Never mind. On or about April the 12th, 2014, in the state and federal district of Nevada and elsewhere. My goodness, that seems rather a long time ago to me, doesn't it to you? Well, it's not so long as to be outside that little old statute of limitations. No, sir. Cliven D. Bundy, all caps again. Is that D for doofus or dumbass? Dimwit? We could have a contest. The thorn in the side Thursday now, isn't it? Actually, no, Carol Baker says it's Bust Bob's Balls Thursday. Oh, no, I don't know if I'm going to make it all the way to 9 o'clock, if that's what it is. Not sure in the least. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention that you can jump in and have a wild old multimedia madcap extravaganza time. Thank you, Labor Man. Cliven D. Bundy, the D is for dickhead. Let's see. How do you feel about that, Professor Spicoli?
You dick!
Yeah, he agrees, absolutely. Dickhead, right. Wow. But you can jump into the chat room and have a merry old time with folks like Anatole and Dwayne and Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Labor Man and Little Gray and Stockton Larry and Texas T and Tim from L.A., all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator and spring having come to Northern California, has folded space to become Man Cave. And there too, is longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So you can be there. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be right in the thick of things. This is, of course, also a listener-supported undertaking, effort, independent broadcast journalism. Well, sort of journalism. We have opinions here, and we don't play that precious by half pissant little game that we don't. But anyway, we try to raise $200 every evening. And thank you very kindly to the Horn community for helping to dig us out of what had been a hole, so that all we've got to do this evening is raise $200. And, well, no, not even that. Wait a minute. 160. 160 because of Tony and Ralphs and Dennis and John. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you very kindly indeed. So 16 at 10, 10 at 16, 1 at 160, 2 at 80, 4 at 40, 8 at 20, 16 at 10. We did that part, didn't we? Yes. 32 at 5, 64 at 250, 128 at a buck and a quarter, and I'm not going any further than that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the PayPal button is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Yes? Mm-hmm. And you can always also use the U.S. Postal Service, the address for which being The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Mm-hmm. And remember, those are made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. Note coming in from Gerald. Until further notice, I would like for all of my future Hitler pool... Oh! To 6:16. 6:16 p.m. Who had 6... Of course Gerald had 6:16 because he set me up for that. To be donated to The Horn General Fund. Thank you. And they will be. So, now let's get back to Brother Bundy. On or about April 12, 2014, in the state and federal district of Nevada and elsewhere, Cliven Dickhead Bundy, defendant herein, aided and abetted by others, did use a dangerous and deadly weapon. That wasn't a dangerous and deadly weapon, that was a freedom protector. Wolverines! To forcibly assault, resist, oppose, impede, intimidate, and interfere with federal law enforcement officers while they were engaged in and on the account of the performance of their official duties, to wit, guarding and protecting government personnel and equipment located at the impoundment site near Bunkerville, Nevada, while executing federal court orders to remove cattle from the federal public lands as described herein. Well, we have seen the worm turneth. Count three, use and carry a firearm in relation to a crime of violence, on or about April 12, 2014, in the state and federal district of Nevada and elsewhere, Cliven Dickhead Bundy, defendant herein, aided and abetted by others, did knowingly use and carry firearms which were brandished during and in relation to a crime of violence for which he may be prosecuted in a court of the United States, that is, assault on a federal law enforcement officer in violation of Title 18 U.S. Code, Section 111B, as charged in Count 2. It's kind of piling up after a little bit, isn't it? And to think they let him travel all the way to Portland, Oregon to serve this on him. Oh, where's your Oath Keepers now, Cloven? You fucking idiot. Count four. Interference with commerce by extortion. Now, I find this one interesting. No, Gerald, it says right there, Cliven D. Bundy. I mean, you don't think it stands for, I mean, what, David, do you? Is there a famous, Brigham Young, no. Is there a famous Mormon D? Well, until we find out otherwise, it'll be Cliven Dickhead Bundy, defendant herein, count four, did obstruct, delay, and affect commerce, and attempt to obstruct, delay, and affect commerce, and the movement of articles and commodities in such commerce by extortion, as those terms are defined by Title 18 U.S. Code, Section 1951, in the defendant Bundy attempted to obtain approximately 400 head of impounded cattle at or near Bunkerville, Nevada, from the care, custody, and possession of the special agent in charge of impoundment operations on federal public lands at or near Bunkerville, Nevada, their consent having been induced by the wrongful use of force, fear, and violence, as described here. Jesus, I think that's, wow. They used to just call that rustling. Use and carry, count five, use and carry a firearm in relation to a crime of violence. Cliven Dickhead Bundy, aided and abetted by others, did knowingly use and carry firearms which were brandished during and in relation to a crime of violence for which he may be prosecuted in a court of the United States, that is, extortion by force, fear, and violence. Count six. I'm getting tired. Cliven Dickhead Bundy, defendant herein, aided and abetted by others, did corrupt and corruptly, I like that, did corruptly and by threats and force and by threatening communications influence, obstruct, and impede, and attempt to influence, obstruct, and impede the due administration of justice in that the defendant threatened force and violence and used force and violence to impede, obstruct, and thwart. Well, who knew there was thwarting? The execution of federal court orders by assaulting and extorting federal officers at the impoundment site near Bunkerville, Nevada, as described herein, yada yada. Then comes the affidavit by the FBI agent, and it's a dandy. And it details the particulars of the investigation into Cloven's assault on federal agents. On April 12, 2014, April is the cruelest month, Bundy and his co-conspirators organized and led a massive armed assault against federal law enforcement officers in and around Bunkerville, Nevada, in order to extort the officers into abandoning approximately 400 head of cattle that were in their lawful care and custody. In addition to conspiring among themselves to plan and execute these crimes, Bundy and his confederates... I just love that they use confederates. Recruited, organized, and led hundreds of others way down yonder in the land of deadbeat cattle. We're gonna have a federal battle. Look away, look away, look away, Bundy land. Bundy and his confederates recruited, organized, and led hundreds of others in using armed force against law enforcement officers in order to achieve their criminal objectives. Yeah, but we never fired our guns. That's okay. That's okay, Skipper. You used them. You still used them. Because, see, that's one thing that little libertarians and little baby anarchists and stuff like that don't understand. If you show up to what you call a peaceful protest, but you're carrying a fucking gun, you know what? It ain't peaceful anymore, because inherent in the presence of the fucking gun is the fact that you might just well decide to use it to shoot somebody in order and furtherance of your goals, thereby making it terrorism. Why is there no terrorism count? What is it? What the does it take to get a count of terrorism against a white guy in this country? Don't ask Bob. They'll figure it out, and you'll find out the hard way. One of the conspiracy's objectives was to thwart the seizure. There's that thwarting again. I think if you put there's a liquid you can put on your thwarts, and they'll just dissolve over time. Was to thwart the seizure and removal of defendant Bundy's cattle from federal public lands. Bundy had trespassed his cattle on federal public lands for over 20 years, refusing to obtain the legally required permits or pay the required fees to keep and graze his cattle on the land. Mm-hmm. What's a white guy got to do to wear a turban? Thank you, Carol. That was very good. Since 1998. Good God, I was only 35 years old. Bundy was under federal court order to remove his trespass cattle, an order Bundy refused to recognize or follow, and which one might argue the federal government refused to enforce. However, in 2013, a federal court issued two more orders for removal, each declaring that, in keeping with the law, the United States was authorized to seize and remove the cattle from the land in the event Bundy refused to do so. Bundy refused. The removal operation began on April 5, 2014. While it was ongoing, Bundy and his co-conspirators used deceit and deception to recruit others to help them force BLM to stop operations, flooding the internet with false and deceitful images and statements to the effect that law enforcement officers were abusing Bundy and stealing his cattle. Actually, the cattle rustler would be Bundy. Deliberately lying, oh, that's some mighty strong language there, Special Agent. Bundy and his co-conspirators pleaded for others to travel to Nevada to stop the abuse by making a show of force against the officers in order to get them to back down and return the cattle. Bundy was by then apparently distraught at having missing a particular a heifer of which he was particularly fond. No, that's not in there. By the morning of April 12th, hundreds of people, many armed with assault rifles and other firearms, had traveled to Bunkerville, becoming Bundy's followers, conspiring with and aiding and abetting him and his co-conspirators to execute a plan to recover Bundy's cattle by force. Oh, wait a minute. That's a particularly fun little paragraph from Lake Bagger Be Gone. Because that's the federal government telling everybody who decided to go and see beautiful downtown Bunkerville that they were liable to be charged as well. that would be delightful, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. So then, on the morning of April the 12th, Bundy organized his followers and gave them the order to get the cattle, directing a crowd of hundreds to travel more than 5 miles to the site where the cattle were corralled. One group of, what were Germans now? Capitalized F, followers, kept law enforcement officers occupied at the main entrance of the site by threatening to enter there, while another group, ultimately consisting of more than 200 capital F followers, because we capitalize nouns now, I guess, sort of indiscriminately when we want to, led by a co-conspirator 2, assaulted the site from below, converging on its most vulnerable point, a narrow entrance located in a wash that ran under highway bridges. Seeing the assault unfold, the officers responded to the wash to prevent entry. Interesting. That almost sounds like the description of a military incident, a militarily planned incident, doesn't it? A feint, and then the actual flanking maneuver? Hmm? Yeah. By God, I think you can probably find that somewhere in von Clausewitz. The 200 followers in the wash, well, they may have been in the wash in April, but they're in the fucking soup now. Sorry, couldn't resist. The 200 followers in the wash, who will soon be hung out to dry, never mind. You can't just put this stuff out there and not to know. The 200 followers in the wash included a significant number brandishing or raising their assault rifles in front of the officers. Some of these gunmen took tactically superior positions on high ground, while others moved in and out of the crowd, masking their movements behind other unarmed followers. The most immediate threat to the officers came from the bridges, where gunmen took sniper positions behind concrete barriers, their assault rifles aimed directly at the officers below. Yeah. This is rather, this is scintillating reading. Having seized the tactical advantage, co-conspirator 2 and the 200... And don't you know that a bunch of them are sitting around going, I wonder who the hell that is, co-conspirator 2. What do you want to bet it's ammonium nitrate Bundy? Uh-huh, uh-huh, see? Having seized the tactical advantage, co-conspirator 2 and the 200 followers pressed forward to and against the wash entrance, demanding that the officers leave and abandon the cattle, threatening to enter by force if the officers did not do so. Outnumbered by more than 4-1, unwilling to risk harm to children and other unarmed bystanders who had accompanied the followers. Makes them sound kind of like a cult, doesn't it? I'm beginning to understand why we're capitalizing. And wishing to avoid the firefight that was sure to follow if they engaged the snipers on the bridge, who posed such an obvious threat to their lives, The officers had no choice and were forced to leave and abandon the cattle to Bundy and his co-conspirators, who promptly released and returned the cattle to Bundy. Thereafter, the conspirators organized armed security patrols and checkpoints in and around Bundy's property to deter and prevent any future law enforcement actions against Bundy or his co-conspirators, and to protect his cattle from future removal actions, a cattle he continued to hold, graze, and keep on federal public lands unlawfully and continues to do so as of the date of this complaint. And it proceeds in that vein. For many pages until you get to, on March 17th, 2014, a BLM special agent notified one of Bundy's adult sons that the special agent was available to answer any questions about the impoundment operation. Bundy's son became angry and threatened to interfere, stating that he and his family would do whatever it takes, and he would have several hundred with him to prevent the BLM from removing the trespass cattle. When asked whether the use of whatever it takes included physical force or violence, Bundy's son replied, "I will do whatever it takes. You interpret that the way you want. 220, 221, whatever it takes." Okay, I added the last part. On March 24, 2014, Bundy threatened to interfere, stating publicly that he intended to organize lots of groups to come from hundreds of miles away, and he was in a range war with BLM that could last a long time. A range war. Well, isn't that just charming? Pick up the gun. I said pick up the gun. You all saw he had a gun. Bang. Not to put too fine a point on it, how unutterably stupid are these Book of Mormon banging weirdos? A range war? The hell? Has ammonium nitrate been watching too many Randolph Scott movies? Is the only thing that comes into their satellite system the dumbass Western Channel? Lord. Oddly enough, the range war didn't last very long, did it? March 25th, Bundy threatened to interfere, stating publicly that Bundy's ready. Whenever the federal government's got the guts to try it, tell him to come. I'll do whatever it takes. Then March 28th, Bundy threatened to interfere, stating publicly, "Oh, those cowboys are going to be the thieves who steal my cattle. It's like they're staging for a war. I told them I'd do whatever it takes. I'll stick with that. Let me tell you about the Negro." Not yet. So then there's a long description of what things mean. And then Bundy and his co-conspirators recruited, organized, and led a force of hundreds of people to threaten and use force and violence to prevent the law enforcement officers from discharging their duties and to coerce their consent to abandon the cattle that were, pursuant to court order, lawfully in their care and custody, in which they were duty-bound to protect. They used deceit and deception in order to knowingly recruit followers. See, that's fun. That's fun because it means that somewhere along the way, when one of these dumbasses, one of these conspirators gets charged, he goes, "No, I was deceived. He deceived me." Well, looks like we just proved count from whatever. traveled in interstate commerce and used other facilities in interstate commerce to threaten force, violence, and economic harm. Used the internet to encourage counsel and incite followers to bring guns to Bundy Ranch for unlawful purposes. Threatened and used force. Counseled and incited and led followers to use, carry, brandish, and aim firearms, including assault rifles. Counseled, incited, and led followers to use, carry, brandish, and aim firearms, including assault rifles, for the purpose of extorting federal law enforcement officers. Organized followers into bodyguards, armed patrols, and security checkpoints for the purpose of using threats, force, violence, and intimidation to protect the conspirators, prevent law enforcement actions against the conspirators, prevent the execution of federal court orders, and prevent law enforcement officers from discharging their duties. Bundy was the leader, organizer, and chief beneficiary of the conspiracy, possessing ultimate authority over the scope, manner, and means of conspiratorial operations and receipt. I wonder if Michelle Fiore might be one of those unnamed co-conspirators. She was having a high old time on the live stream last night. I think you're right, Carol Baker. Carol noting, I'm thinking Cliven's expertise on the Negro will be vastly expanded in the stir. Yes. Oh, this. You know what? This does. Page 18, page 19, page 20. Oh, and now we get to the broadcasting. On or about April 8th, 2014, co-conspirator 4 and Bundy broadcast, because they just refer to him Bundy now. They don't just call him Clive and Dickhead Bundy. And Bundy broadcasted messages over the internet using deceit, deception, and threats to incite others to travel to Bundy Ranch for unlawful purposes. Bundy told listeners, among other things, that they have my house surrounded. The federal government is stealing my property. The BLM are armed with assault rifles. They have snipers. I haven't called no militia, but hey, that looks like where we are. There's a strong army out here. We're going to have to take our land back. Somebody's going to have to back off. We, the people, will put our boots down and walk over these people. They're up against a man who will do whatever it takes. Now let me tell you about the Negro. No, I added that last part. But see, that's what he thinks. Every sentence ends with, let me tell you about the Negro, inside the sick, twisted, and spirochete-tunneled poor excuse for a brain that resides inside the skull of Cloven Bundy. In that same broadcast, co-conspirator 4 used threats to incite listeners to travel to Bundy Ranch for unlawful purposes, telling listeners, among other things, if this is not the issue right now where we stand and fight to the absolute death, there's no other option. The federal government must get out of the state of Nevada. If they don't want it to be peaceful, it's by their choice. I'm calling on all Americans anywhere in the vicinity of Clark County, Nevada. If you're in Nevada and can legally carry, get weapons out there, okay? We're going to stand and fight in Clark County, Nevada. They will leave or else. Mm-hmm. Another message on April 8, 2014. Time to invite everyone to the first annual Patriots picnic at the Bundy Ranch. And, of course, they conveniently add a sick after Patriots because the dumbasses don't know what an apostrophe's for. Uh-huh. And this really is a compendium of how this thing was organized over the internet, bringing people from all over the country to hopefully get their war on in Bunkerville, Nevada. Threatening the SAC, co-conspirator 4 said, what are you guys going to do if 10,000 people show up? Are you prepared for this? I don't believe in firing a single bullet unless in absolute defense, and it's legal and constitutional. Well, legal and constitutional rode out of town with the good cowboy earlier, I'm afraid, yes. The Then there was the message on April 9th. The Bundy family has requested help from militia groups, including Operation Mutual Aid, Three Percenters Club, Freedom Fighters, and other operations to come and stand with us and regain our rights and freedom. You know, and Cliven's illegal cattle. And it goes on. I'd almost forgotten what it... So this reads like a, it reads like a manifesto of the right wing sedition movement. We're going to have a face to face confrontation. We have thousands of people. We're going to come here, and it's non-negotiable. If that comes about, we want to make sure that BLM officer who wants to stand down will not be retaliated against. This is non-negotiable. If you make the decision to go face-to-face and someone gets hurt, we're going to hold you responsible. Tell D.C. that the justification for this is from a corrupt court. I'm relaying a message. If anyone is acting unconstitutionally, they will be arrested. I came here to allow you to prevent a scenario where someone gets hurt. Full of sound and fury, aren't they? And then there's the part about the April 12th rally, where Cloven said, God is going to be with us. It is time to take our land back. And then told him to go get my cows. Yeah, you can read all of this at scribd.com, S-C-R-I-B-D.com. One hopes that there's no plea deal. Try this damn thing. All of it signed. Well, paragraph 103, from April 12, 2014, through the date of this complaint, Bundy made public statements threatening that he would continue to interfere with federal law enforcement actions against him or the cattle, continued to employ bodyguards to protect him and other co-conspirators from federal law enforcement actions, and from April 12, 2014, through the date of this complaint, the Bundy and his co-conspirators, well, he gets an article now, continue to take such actions as necessary to hold, protect, and prevent the impoundment of the extorted cattle and such other trespass cattle that are subject to the 2013 court orders, signed Joel P. Willis, Federal Bureau of Investigation. One hopes that, yes, the whole book gets chucked at him. Weird bastards. So, 18 minutes before the hour... And I was just thinking about a song lyric. I got it. It's not exactly up-tempo, but it's got a perfect reference for this song, or for this story. Yeah. And, of course, the whole thing is over now, mercifully. After a great deal of hissifying and overnight. The last lonesome cowboy has given himself up. That would be David Fry. Early this morning, Sean Anderson, Sandy Anderson, and Jeff Banta all surrendered. Fry was on the verge of surrendering, but then he said, I can't come out because I'm a man. I'm making a stand. A stand means you're willing to risk your life. And then, what? Really? He said that his grievances had not been assuaged because his income taxes were funding legal abortion. And then said, as a citizen of the Constitution, I declare war against the federal government right now. Right now. Not yesterday, not 2 weeks ago. Right now. Fry then asked, and if you can find a scenario involving armed federal agents or any law enforcement agents that matches this in relation to a person of color in this country, I would actually be relieved, because it would mean that we are not nearly as racist in this country as I'm pretty goddamn sure we are. Fry demanded that FBI agents yell hallelujah when he walked out of a building. They complied. That's right. He walked out of a building. The FBI agents yelled hallelujah, and then he surrendered. Maybe if Eric Garner had just yelled hallelujah. Maybe if Black Lives Matters yelled hallelujah instead of hands up, don't shoot. Note coming from Marty via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. So that fool hadn't heard of the Hyde Amendment, which needs to be repealed post-haste. No. He lives in a world that exists entirely inside the thin gray settlings that pass for his own brain. Mm-hmm. Among his other... I'm not making this up. Among his other complaints, Fry whined... he can't legally smoke the marijuanas there where he lives in Ohio, because it ain't legal there, but he ain't got enough monies to move to a state where it's legal. Well, you know what? The Supermax is in Colorado, and marijuana is legal in Colorado, so I say that we, the people of the United States, seeking to make that more perfect union, accede to his demands and transport him forthwith to the Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado, where he still won't be able to be, he won't be able to smoke the marijuanas, but he will be in a state where it's legal to do so, and he won't have spent a penny doing it. Mm-hmm. Now, if we can just get an indictment against, wouldn't it be fun? I know. It's completely outside the realm of possibility. But still, wouldn't it be fun if there was a way whereby Franklin Graham, who somehow got himself or inveigled himself into all of this. Wouldn't it be fun if there was some way that he could, that stupid bastard, that penny ante cheap ass, well, no, there's nothing stupid penny ante or cheap ass about him. He's a high level grifter. If that sucker could get indicted out of this, Michelle Fiore, that fraud merchant, from the Washington state legislature, who gave aid and comfort to these dumb bastards. Then again, I don't believe in the maltreatment of the mentally ill. And there was more than a little bit of there was more than a little bit of lunacy enough to make you think that maybe Mr. Fry had gotten a little case of bird sanctuary fever, if you will. Yeah.
I'm thinking that the American people need to know that when they're trampling on your rights this much, sometimes it's better to die.
Now the fun part begins, finding out exactly how much nasty crap these patriots did while they were ransacking and looting the bird sanctuary. How many, as Billable Rick, for instance, has pointed out, federal files, personnel files, sensitive personal information, things like that, how much of that they've accessed and shared out. But yeah, apparently if you're a white guy surrendering after a 5-week-long seditious invasion of property belonging to we the people of the United States, you can make demands of FBI agents and get them to yell hallelujah when you walk out the door, and you'll be just fine. Meanwhile, out at the campus in the Bay Area, I'm just certain that the folks there at Apple are just tickled pink to have their logo splattered all over the live stream. Yeah, I know. So we got all that, and we got a lot more, and yes, we've got a pageant this evening. It is, after all. Okay, didn't know that. Sparky telling me Dave Fry is half Japanese. And by the way, Clive and D. Bundy, another entry in the contest. Thomas pointing out, stands for douchebag. Dickheads can be fun, just saying. Jim says, what would Hedley Lamarr have to say? Round up a posse? Jim added, Cliven can stampede his cattle through the Vatican. A ripping and a roaring, a whooping and a snorting and a... We'll pull a number two on that. Well, what was it? A number what? Yeah, from Blazing Saddles. But old Dave Fry was upset about, worried about all the little fetuses. And apparently others are as well. You may recall, a couple of months back, when Robert Louis Deere went on a murderous rampage at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs that didn't even do abortions. Well, it's due to reopen Monday. And guess what? They may have cleaned up the blood, you know, from the people that the that Christian Robert Louis Deere killed. And now Personhood USA is saying that they're going to The shooting in November killed 3 people, among those pro-life hero Officer Garrett Swayze. Thinking of the shooting brings tears to my eyes. Jennifer Mason, the communications director of Personhood USA, said in the email, we unequivocally oppose all violence after the fact, including abortion-related violence, which isn't violence, against born and unborn people alike, and of course the unborn people aren't people. That is why we must legally close Planned Parenthood's doors by making abortion illegal city by city across the U.S.
Now Planned Parenthood is reopening their doors, all set to kill innocent babies once more.
Even though that Planned Parenthood was not an abortion provider.
Well, I'll tell you what, facts don't slow these bastards down a little bit, no.
It's like decon on, I mean, there's certain breeds of rat that decon doesn't even slow down. So, yeah, the stupid.
Oh, that's the old number 7. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. That's when we ride through a town a whoopin' and a hollering.
Yes. Yep. So, the old number 7.
So it's about 5 minutes before the hour, and we will close out the filibobster. And take our top of the hour break. It being a Thursday and all, we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to those. And, of course, again, we're trying to raise $160 this evening, thanks to our subscribers. And so far, we are at, zero. Hopefully that will not persist. And, yeah, are you listening, Michael and Madison? I guarantee within probably the first couple of bars of this, you'll know why I chose it to bump out with. This is Conversation Radio on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
My lady, my love, my mom and dad.
It's Thursday, February 11, 2016.
No, we will not allow back into the White House a political party which is so beholden to the fossil fuel industry that they cannot even acknowledge the scientific reality of climate change, let alone do anything about it.
Bernie Sanders slams Republican presidential candidates on climate change denial after winning New Hampshire in a landslide.
The science tells us we have to do more.
Supreme Court says, not right now, as it halts historic new emission standards for power plants. UN moves ahead anyway on emission standards for the airline industry. Plus, heat wave in the Arctic as winter sea ice hits the lowest level ever recorded.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So the groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, said it's going to be an early spring, which means warmer weather. So naturally, the conservatives now think that Punxsutawney Phil is in the tank with the liberals on global warming.
Oh, like he's not. Wake up, sheeple. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you had to be happy hearing Bernie Sanders talk about climate change about three different times.
during his victory speech in New Hampshire.
Yes, it was great. In his victory speech after his landslide win in the New Hampshire Democratic presidential primary this week, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders scathingly attacked the Republican Party's denial of climate science as a primary reason to keep them out of the White House. He went on to echo Pope Francis in describing climate action as our moral responsibility.
We have a moral responsibility to work with countries throughout the world to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy.
And the crowd went wild.
Yes, they did. And in her concession speech, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called for the U.S. to become a clean energy superpower of the world, launching a national mission to create millions of jobs building new renewable energy infrastructure. Not surprisingly, on the Republican side, not a single Republican presidential candidate mentioned climate change in New Hampshire at all.
Color me shocked.
Meanwhile,
we're the first generation to feel the impact of climate change, and the last generation that can do something about it. And that's why I committed the United States to leading the world on this challenge, because I believe there is such a thing as being too late.
Well, the Supreme Court disagrees. That was President Obama back in August announcing his landmark Clean Power Plan, the first ever standards for the nation's power plants to cut the carbon emissions that cause dangerous global warming. As if to prove that elections have consequences, on Tuesday, the conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court, in a very narrow 5-4 decision, put a temporary stay on those new emissions standards, halting their implementation while a coalition of states and fossil fuel interests challenge their legality in court. This ruling is unprecedented. Never before has the court issued a stay on any federal regulation undergoing lower court review. This is an ominous sign that the court's conservative majority could overturn it.
So this case is still being heard at the lower court level.
Yes.
And the court has said that while it's being heard, these standards still must move forward. And then the Supreme Court comes in and says, no, no, we have to stop it until the lower court has figured things out.
States can go forward if they want to, but the Supreme Court is giving them a pass if they don't want to.
The four liberal justices on the court said they wouldn't have even taken up the issue. Just amazing. Talk about your activist courts.
But the world is moving ahead, even if the U.S. isn't for now. The United Nations this week proposed the first ever limits on carbon emissions for the airline industry. It's the fastest growing sector of emissions. Environmental groups said the proposed standards are far too weak to make a difference, but United Nations officials defended the rules, saying they will spur innovation in research and development of low carbon alternatives to jet fuel.
Well, don't tell the U.S. Supreme Court.
Finally, up in the Arctic, it's deep winter, and sea ice should be building up toward its annual maximum extent. However, with unusually mild temperatures this winter, including record warmth in December that saw the temperatures go above freezing in the Arctic, scientists now say that in January, the Arctic hit the lowest sea ice extent on record since satellite measurements began in 1979, according to the National Snow and Ice Data Center. That's equivalent to missing a region of ice the size of Texas, New Mexico, Maryland, and New Hampshire combined.
So the whole thing about global warming being over, not so over?
Not so over.
Imagine that. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ice, ice, baby. Ice, ice, baby.
Well, my evening just got ruined. I don't even like to think about Vanilla Ice, let alone hear him. And then it makes me, of course, think about Vanilla Isis. From the fact-checking department, Ron corrected his error, and Gerald was there with the clip. Yes, it's not a number 7. No, 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 no. Nothing of the sort.
Fortunately, there is one thing that stands between me and that property, the rightful owners. There must be some way of scaring them off, driving them out, getting rid of every human being alive. It's down the hall and to the left.
No, sir.
What?
Sir.
What?
I got it.
You do? What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Let's see.
I got it! I got it!
So, what?
We'll work up a number six on him.
Number six? I'm afraid I'm not familiar with that one.
Well, that's where we go riding into town. A whopping and a whooping. Every living thing that moves within an inch of its life. Except the women folks, of course.
You spare the women?
No, we rape the shit out of them at the number six dance later on.
That's marvelous. That's so creative,
too. Ow!
My Taggart, you've been hurt.
Oh, that uppity nigger went and hit me on.
Jesus God.
The number six dance. Yeah. Okay, so it was a number six, not a number seven.
God. Yeah, okay.
It is the 11th day of February, 2016, and Marty's trying to salve my assaulted eardrums. Don't think of it as from Vanilla Ice. Think of it as being from the originals, Queen and David Bowie. Yeah, but no, but Freddie wasn't sitting there going, Ice, Ice, Baby. No, no, no. No, oh God! So here at the Horn, being as how we are in the middle of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, we've been following the slow turnings of the wheels of justice in regard to the people who poisoned 300,000 human beings here. The Freedom Industries disaster has largely been forgotten by the rest of the country. I'm finding it a little bit more difficult to forget because, again, 300,000 people were poisoned in the name of a free market, deregulated business model. So Denny Farrell, the guy who couldn't be bothered to maintain his company in such a way that at least 10,000 gallons, thank you, Gerald, didn't get dumped into the Elk River, and 300,000 people didn't get poisoned. He had his day in court today. The prosecution had recommended, according to the federal sentencing guidelines, a sentence range between 18 and 24 months for Denny, a former bar owner. He's a former bar owner, isn't he? And he had pleaded guilty to stream littering, discharge of refuse into a stream. You know what? Those 10,000 plus gallons of MCHM, that wasn't refuse. That was commerce. That was stuff being stored in a tank to be sold to various coal companies for use to clean coal. Remember what the West Virginia Coal Association of Friends of Coal said in the immediate aftermath of the Freedom disaster? If it's good enough to clean coal, it's good enough for me. Yeah, that. Well, so 18 to 24 months on a charge of discharging refuse into a stream. And a negligent violation of the Clean Water Act permit. Not an intentional one. No, it couldn't possibly be intentional. No, hell no. So today, Denny Farrell, longtime president and owner of Freedom Industries, went before U.S. District Judge Thomas E. Johnston. U.S. District Judge Thomas E. Johnston is a George W. Bush appointee to the federal bench. Mm-hmm. Now that I've mentioned that he's a Bush appointee, I don't even have to finish the rest of the story, do I? So a man who negligently, in other words, not displaying the due care that a reasonable, prudent person in the same or similar circumstances would have shown, who negligently allowed 10,000 plus gallons of a horrible poison to go into the water supply of 300,000 people, Well, Judge Thomas E. Johnston looked at him as he has looked at the other defendants who have been herewith sentenced, none of whom have done any jail time, and said, "This defendant is hardly a criminal."
Do you call it when you poison 300? How many would he have to poison, Your Ornery? A million?
This defendant is hardly a criminal. So he's getting what? Yeah, he's getting, nice, huh? He's getting 30 days in jail. He's getting 30 days in a federal criminal facility. 30 days. And he has to pay a $20,000 fine. I'm listening. Wait. Those aren't tears of grief. That's the merry cackling of joy I'm hearing out there. Hey, did you get that? Yeah, yeah, they said I'm hardly a criminal. He's the first of them to get any jail time at all. 30 days when he was supposed to get between 18 and 24 months. Man, that white skin will work wonders. There's power, power, power in the skin of the white folks. Never mind. Yeah. Carol Baker says they make it sound like littering, like he tossed a cigarette butt into a creek. 10,000 plus gallons of methylchlorine hexane methanol. Mm-hmm. Now the authorities, and of course he's never going to have to drink any. No, he had bottled water and everything the entire time. The authorities are seeking jail time for Gary Southern. But if you think that Bush appointee Thomas Johnston is going to say that all is well and all is good, this man is hardly a criminal. No. Criminals are people who don't wear suits and ties. What a pity this story, what a pity the world has moved on from this story. It might be, say, instructive in the ongoing narrative of various presidential campaigns about how the poor get justice while mercy is reserved for the Wall Street business class types. Mm-hmm. And water. Water, water everywhere. Nor any drop to drink. Ron and Raleigh asking a good question. What would happen if I were to drain my crankcase into the storm drain in front of my house accidentally? Oh, it depends on whether you'd be wearing a $1,500 tropical wool blend suit while you did it. Because then maybe a Bush appointee could look at you, Ron, and say, "This man is obviously not a criminal." Well, I mean, then there's that white part. I mean, And from Steve in New York, trying to avoid gimmick infringement. No, 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 Bob. Just like the Freedom Protectors, just go off. This tank just leaked. It did. It just leaked. Oh, by the way, we're going to have some of those cold-ass temperatures that were the order of the day back when the Freedom disaster happened a couple of years ago. And, of course, the regulations that were put in place to try to keep it from happening again have largely been rolled back or eliminated by our teabagger legislature. Sure hope it doesn't happen again. Not that the goddamn teabaggers will give a rat's rear end if it does. No. But like I said, water, water everywhere. Nor any drop to drink. From a website called healthfreedoms.org comes this headline. Navajo water supply is more horrific than Flint, but no one cares because they're Native American. The article states, the news out of Flint, Michigan brought the issue of contaminated drinking water into sharp focus. Oddly enough, I guess the poisoning of 300,000 people 2 years earlier didn't. As it was revealed that officials at every level, local, state, and federal, knew about lead-poisoned water for months but did nothing to address the problem. Okay, that's true. In the western U.S., water contamination has been a way of life for many tribes. The advocacy group Clean Up the Mines describes the situation in Navajo country, which is far worse than in Flint, Michigan. Since the 1950s, their water has been poisoned by uranium mining to fuel the nuclear industry and the making of atomic bombs for the U.S. military. Coal mining and coal-fired power plants have added to the mix. The latest assault on Navajo water was carried out by the massive toxic spills into the Animas and San Juan rivers when the EPA recklessly attempted to address the abandoned Gold King mine. Yeah, see, this tries to drop it on the EPA. It's not. But what is said about what's going on in that part of the country with regard to indigenous populations is absolutely true. There is no comprehensive law requiring cleanup of abandoned uranium mines, meaning corporations and government can walk away from them after exploiting their resources. 75% of abandoned uranium mines are on federal and tribal lands. And, of course, if Arizona Senators Jeff Flake and John McCain get their way, there will be a great big another toxic hole in the ground at an Apache sacred site called Oak Flat. But the people are not going quietly. And they are determined that, just as my friends up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin said, there will be no mine. Leona Morgan of Dine No Nukes points out one example, the United Nuclear Corporation mill tailing spill of 1979 north of Church Rock, New Mexico, left an immense amount of radioactive contamination that downstreamers today are currently receiving in their drinking water. A mostly Navajo community in Sanders, Arizona, has been exposed to twice the legal limit allowable for uranium through their tap. How is there a legal limit? I mean, other than zero. How is there an acceptable legal limit for uranium in your drinking water? Last week, and this was a week ago, Dine No Nukes participated in protests in Washington, D.C. to raise awareness of past and ongoing contamination of water supplies in the West, which disproportionately affects Indian country. The delegation is warning of the toxic legacy caused by more than 15,000 AUMs nationwide, extreme water contamination, surface strip coal mining, and power plants burning coal laced with radioactive particles, radioactive waste from oil well drilling in the Bakken oil range, mill tailings, waste storage, and renewed mining threats to sacred places such as Mount Taylor in New Mexico and Red Butte in Arizona. Yeah, pay no mind. Right? Pay no mind. It's only poor people. Nothing to see here. Nothing to worry about.
And then there's... Oh, where'd that go?
There's more of this stuff all over the country.
Does anybody think Ted Cruz gives a damn if poor people drink poisoned water? Little Marco Rubio? Jebbia? John Kasich? Who lectured on what's happening in Flint at the same time that Sebring, Ohio has similar lead poisoning problems? And then there was a little bit of a disclosure, and I can't find the story right at hand, but Dominion Energy over in the Commonwealth, the old Dominion, Virginia, well, they were doing some work on their coal ash ponds, and they just happened to release some coal ash water, you know, a few bajillion gallons. Not that that's going to show up in the for-profit media or anything, because, you know, why would it? What's the point? Nothing to it. See, when Bernie Sanders talks about a revolution, he's not talking about pitchforks and torches. He's talking about people using their inherent power as citizens of these United States to make these United States a place that works for all of us. That's why, well, in the early 1960s, when the white power structure counseled the civil rights movement to take it easy, just take it easy. Don't be so strident. Don't be so militant. Don't be so radical. We can take little tiny baby steps to make things better. The leaders of that movement said no. Incrementalism is the same as no forward motion at all. And it is through that militancy and through that radicalism and through that persistence that we got, even though it's been gutted by the present Supreme Court, that we got the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. Because it had to be done immediately. And by the way, over at pbs.org, under the American Experience program, there was a documentary aired last week, last Tuesday. I don't know for how much longer it'll be up, but I watched it. Agnes and I watched it a couple of nights ago, called "The Killing of a President." And it's about the assassination of the president no one ever thinks about having been assassinated, namely James A. Garfield. Elected president of the United States in the contest of 1880. And I was, I freely acknowledge that I was largely ignorant of that period of American history. So I always welcome the opportunity to try to ameliorate my ignorance when the opportunity arises. And I didn't know. I did not know what it was that propelled Garfield to the Republican nomination that year. Some wanted Grant, some wanted Blaine,
and on the 36th ballot of the Republican convention, they said, screw it, and nominated Garfield. And Garfield had been an officer during the Civil War. And he had been at Shiloh and the Siege of Corinth. And he marched eastward across North Alabama, where he saw for the first time in his Midwestern Ohioan life, and he had a hard upbringing. But he saw for the first time slavery. And it sickened him and was heartbreaking to him. And by the time he was running for president, the first vestiges of Jim Crow had begun to grow in the American South because the federal government had begun to wimp out on its defense of newly freed people's lives and rights. The vote had been given to freed male slaves and had been enforced by federal troops. But with the rise of things like the Klan, the federal government had slowly, or not so slowly, begun to absent themselves from the South, allowing the voter suppression to begin. And the re-disenfranchisement of freed slaves. And Garfield came to his nomination with a renewed determination to do right by the people freed by the Civil War, the slaves, the ex-slaves, whom the power brokers of the South were determined, in conjunction with their useful pawns, to keep in some form of servitude, if not outright ownership. And in fact, he used a speech that he gave in New York to extol the virtues of those freed slaves. And with his murder by a man who was obviously or seems obvious to us now, to modern medicine, to have been gravely mentally ill, that dream died with him. And I mention all of this because Garfield appeared not to be interested in some sort of incrementalism, but in a firm determination that the fullness of civic life be granted to and protected on behalf of the freed slave population. Because Garfield, too, recognized that incrementalism was no freedom. And so it came today as perhaps not a surprise, but a disappointment to find that one of my personal heroes, Representative John Lewis of Georgia, had declared his undying devotion to Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton. I'm not going to deliver some excoriation of Representative Lewis. Every person has a right to his or her opinion. And in the case of Representative Lewis, he not only has that right, but he fought and bled for it. So no, not going to do that. But opinions are exactly that, opinions, and they may be rightly and wrongly held. And I think that Representative Lewis holds the wrong opinion. For him, in Georgia, it was probably politically expedient. And for him and his age group, incrementalism, the sort of incrementalism that Hillary Clinton offers, probably seems perhaps wise. But it is disappointing just the same. Because the same energies that motivated, or at least analogous energies to those that motivated the civil rights movement, are motivating an entire swath of millions of Americans to rally to the standard borne by Senator Sanders. Break up the big banks. Reinstate Glass-Steagall. Make Wall Street pay its fair share. Create a transaction tax that will fund universal access to higher education for those who want it and need it. Because it's not just wants anymore, it's needs. If you want to survive in modern brutal America and in most instances try to do so without the benefit of some level of higher education, you're screwed. So it's not a want, it's a need. And we're not going to get there. We're not going to get to anything that resembles social justice in the United States by taking the incremental one step forward and two steps back approach that Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton advocates. $12 an hour for a minimum wage 5 years from now is hardly the battle cry of economic justice. Frankly, 15 isn't either. 20 is where the minimum wage should be in the United States if it had kept pace with inflation from 1960, 56 years ago, to the present. If the minimum wage had been indexed to inflation in 1960, it would be $20 an hour now. Now, the endorsement of Senator Clinton came from CBC PAC, the Congressional Black Caucus PAC. The meeting where the endorsement was reached was held at Democratic National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C. Which tells you a little bit about how the decision was probably reached. Representative Keith Ellison took immediately to the Twitters to let people know that the Congressional Black Caucus had not endorsed a candidate, and that, in fact, his input was not even sought by the Congressional Black Caucus PAC in reaching the endorsement. To the extent that a PAC issued the endorsement, I guess that kind of stands to reason that they wouldn't endorse a guy who wants nothing to do with any PACs. If you've got PACs, Hillary's your candidate, because she doesn't seem to be bothered by that level of filthy lucre in politics. There's Hillary PACs all over the place. Jennifer, for instance, in Australia says, I join those who are baffled, miffed, by the choice of John Lewis. My heart started to bleed. Then I reminded myself that perhaps there's an aspect of liberation solidarity for some folks who are so determined to elect a woman, while I do not agree. And while I do not agree, I can understand. As do I. One part that I don't agree with that I think is probably was probably scripted and planned, and I find to just be dirty, was the part where they got John Lewis to say that he doesn't know if Bernie Sanders was ever involved in the civil rights movement. He said, well, I was heading the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and I never saw Bernie Sanders anywhere. Although, oddly enough, if you Google Bernie Sanders and John Lewis, one of the things you'll immediately find in the images is a picture of him walking side by side with them walking side by side together at the anniversary of the march in Selma. Because Bernie was there. Bernie led protests of Howard Johnson's, their motels and restaurants, when it came to light that they engaged in disgusting, discriminatory policies and practices. Yeah, King of Cups in the chat room, you're right. Keith Ellison is pissed. So, to those who are disheartened by it, I understand, and I find it kind of sad myself, but it is not like Representative Lewis probably didn't have his reasons. Thomas says, I just wanted to let you know, I think John did the endorsement because he endorsed President Obama, and you can't screw over the Clintons more than once, if you feel me. Well, yeah, but see, there was something else that was, there was a reminiscence in what John Lewis said about, oh, I never saw him. You remember back in 2008 when somebody on the campaign trail asked Hillary if Barack Obama was a secret Muslim? And she said, not that I know of. Not no, not my God, what kind of a filthy smear is that, but not that I know of. You know, too cute by half. Well, he may say he worked for civil rights, but I never saw him. Jennifer asks, why have people been so blind regarding Bernie? I've been following his career since my early 20s. Perhaps those who have never seen him haven't been able to look past his skin color. Racism? Yeah, let's make this clear, because there's a little, looks like there's a little confusion in the chat room. Yeah, there went the computer. Too much to hope, I guess. There is the Congressional Black Caucus, and then there is a separate entity called the Congressional Black Caucus PAC. And the Congressional Black Caucus PAC is who endorsed Hillary Clinton, much to the chagrin of at least one or two members of the Congressional Black Caucus, of whom Keith Ellison is one. Hey, let's go over to the phone lines. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tracy, what's happening?
I was just eating noodles, and I'm like, oh, God, put me on the air. Okay, I'm not choking off food. See, the food, how did I speak to that soup that I sent
you? I saw the food porn. Bad, bad woman, and, you.
And then I sent you a picture of how warm it is in LA right now.
Yeah, I saw that one, too. 88. Well, at least I won't be getting a sunburn here where I am.
No, you will not. But next week it's going to be cold again. So I'm just tired and don't. I have no idea how to dress anymore. It's just 1 minute it's hot, 1 minute it's cold. At least it's consistently cold where you are.
Well, not really. I mean, we've had a bizarrely warm winter. But we've come into the teeth of the mean stuff now.
This is when it gets really ugly.
Yeah, I mean we're in the single digits overnight, and we'll be down below zero by Saturday night. But it'll start warming up next week, and maybe we'll be 88 too, because climate change is a great big hoax.
Yeah, that's not real. That's not. I don't know science.
Right.
It's yeah. So. I didn't even know there was enough people in the Black Caucus to have a PAC.
Well, there's the CBC PAC, and then they've got people. They've invited in who have.
I'm being snarky.
No, I know, I know, but I mean, they're really. And then the important part is they've invited in some people with some real official Jed Clampett walking around money.
Ah, okay. So, see, here's my thing. Like I said before. When the primary in California rolls around, I will be voting for Mr. Bernie Sanders. Because, like you said, this incremental bullshit, my folks have been waiting for 40 acres and a mule for a minute. Okay? So, how much longer do we have to wait? It's like Andrew Young telling Obama.
Yeah, how many times... Because, you know, if you look around out there, Tracy, you'll find a lot of people saying, you know, there's another, there's another financial disaster in the offing. Really? How many times does Wall Street get to do that before we, and can we, can we incrementally ask them to please stop?
Right. I was just watching Madoff the other. I watched that last week. They were showing, you know, they did the miniseries Madoff with my boy Richard Dreyfuss, and to watch what he was doing, you know, it was a Ponzi scheme. But the thing is, people were calling foul and no one listened. Because why? Money. The right people were getting rich, and so the little people. Were just, you know, well, I'll, you know, what is it that he's the ultimate clown man, because he made people beg for him to take their money. And then they got filthy clowns. They were bamboozled. And basically that's what's happening with our country right now. People are being bamboozled. They don't even realize that they're being taken for a ride, and they're, you know, they're paying for this ride. It's just like, oh my God. And then our girl, Hillary, I have no words for her. No words for her. I pray. I mean, in the fairy tale world with unicorn wishes and all that might, you know, it would be Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren ticket. I could die a happy person if that happens. Speaking of which, if he does get the nomination, who do you think he's going to ask to be his running mate?
I got no clue. There's a lot of people that would like to have it be Elizabeth Warren. I sincerely doubt that, because just having
we need her in Congress.
Well, we need her in the Senate, but we also mm-hmm. also having two people from neighboring states in New England. Is probably not a great idea for the rest of the country.
Right. Right, you got to get somebody from another part of the country.
So, you know, finding some progressive somewhere else, almost a necessity. Now, the universe is much more broadly open for Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton.
Yeah.
Because she can pretty much pick anybody she wants because she's the, you know, she's the focus. She's the, you know, it's her turn.
You know, and I was going to say something about that. You know, you were talking about privilege and entitlement. Who says it's her turn? Just because she says so, just because Bill Clinton says so, just because a few other folks said so, that automatically makes it her turn?
Apparently, yes.
Okay.
I mean, maybe, who knows? I mean, maybe that's the... It has been speculated and rumored in the past that that was the nature of the deal that they had within their relationship, that he would be president and then she would be president. I don't know any of that to be true. I know nothing about that whatsoever.
But it bothers me because yes, she, you know. She's definitely qualified to be, what do you call it, imperial leader? Not president. What do you call it? The imperial... How do you put it? The imperial leader?
Oh, the imperial administrator?
Yes. 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 Oh, before I forget, do you remember you were coming up trying to think of what the D stand for in Colvin Bundy?
Yes.
Douche fuckle.
Douche, what?
Douche buckle.
Douche buckle?
Buckle.
Wow. Douche buckle. Wow, that's worse than nozzle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. We'll put that on the list, without a doubt.
Yeah, that right there. So back to, you know, battling former secretary, former senator, former first lady, Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm tired of people feeling, I mean, how about this? It's the people in French turn to have clean drinking water. How about that? How about it? People who want to go to college is trying to be able to go to college and not go into debt. How about that? How about...
Radical, I'm telling you, radical.
How about it's a black person's turn not to be able to, walk down the street and not to worry about being shot? How about that?
Yeah, and just remember, I mean, spread it around. Next time any police points firearms at any person of color, what they have to do is demand that the law enforcement authority yell hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Sing and yell, say hallelujah.
It's enough to make you holler.
Where's my boy Marvin? Makes me want to holler, throw up both my hands. I mean, like I said, if you want to talk about terms, how about if my some really good friends that can't afford to live, you know, they live in a hotel because they can't afford to get the first and last month's rent together, or because they can't pass a credit check. Why? Because they lost their job. And then they used all their money and savings to try to find a place to live. But because this is the way the system is set up, they'll be spending, they're spending upwards to like $80 a week to live in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Well, see, Carol Baker just said something a minute ago that I find interesting. Carol noted, if we end income inequality, educate everyone for free, and offer a Medicare for all, what demographic benefits more than any other? Wouldn't that be the black community? And wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't it just be one?
But those are all things that Senator Clinton says never ever.
Well, what I don't understand are, I mean, we're educated people, and we get it. But how are we going to get this message to the masses? How are we going to get these people to see that Hillary is part of the problem? Actually, the people in New Hampshire said it. They said it overwhelmingly by, what, 60%?
Yes, and yet because the system is rigged, even though she got stomped, she's going to come away with as many delegates in New Hampshire as, you know, Bernie got.
Yeah. Well, Bernie got 16 and she got 9, right?
Oh, but she gets the superdelegates, too.
Now, tell me what is a superdelegate.
Superdelegates are people who are deemed to be delegates to the Democratic National Convention and have a vote by virtue of holding certain offices. Like if you're a member of Congress or a governor or, you know, that sort of senator, what have you, you get to be a superdelegate. And it was a system that was put in place, Tracy, to make sure that some populist candidate never came along and snatched the nomination away from the, and this is the word that's in current coin now, the establishment. And that's the bullshit argument being made by Hillary's supporters now that, you know, all you silly idealistic dreamer Bernie supporters can just go home because it's Hillary's turn. She's already got the superdelegates. So why don't you people just sit down and shut up and get in line and do what you're told?
Isn't that what they said about Obama in 2007 and 2008?
Yeah, well, yes. As a matter of fact, yes. Oh, Hillary, it's Hillary's turn. Hillary's already got all the superdelegates. So, Senator Obama, why don't you just go back and organize a community or something?
Await your turn.
You know, we'll get around to letting one of you people be president, with all deliberate speed.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Okay, I mean, if you want to hoot and holler and scream, I mean, it's okay. I mean, this is that kind of program, Tracy. So,
I mean, well, I'm in a restaurant. Don't let me judge.
Okay. Well, I understand.
I'm going to be as good as I can be. But because when I saw that, I'm like, he beat her. He whooped her air. But she got almost as many delegates as he did. That was another reason why I was going to call to ask you how did that happen.
And just by way of sharing, you know, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan points out, the Clintons know the administrative apparatus. Would she be promising key positions to key supporters now? Doesn't it work like that? And yeah, it kind of does.
I just don't get it. I mean, I know the system is rigged and everything, but somebody was posting, I was seeing every so often I just go through Facebook and read. Some people post this, and what I love are the people that are Republicans who are like, I'm not voting Republican. I can't, in good conscience as an American, vote Republican. If Donald Trump is the Republican nominee.
Well, this is kind of interesting. Carol just provided this to me. Jonathan Capehart. Jonathan Capehart at the Washington Post offered a theory today that the reason that people like John Lewis are getting behind Hillary is because Cornel West is such such an enthusiastic supporter of Senator Sanders.
It's hugely enthusiastic. And we both know that, you know, Cornel West has not made any friends with our president.
Right. And that's precisely what Jonathan Capehart cites, his reference to Obama as a Rockefeller Republican in blackface. Then he gets then he goes on to cite the fact that Killer Mike is supporting Sanders, and he referred to Obama as a house slave.
Who's Killer Mike?
He's a rapper.
Oh, okay. I figured as much. He called our president a house Negro?
Yes. One of his raps, according to Capehart, is, we know that house got air conditioning and the sweetest lemonade, but don't forget your color, brother. We still motherfucking slaves.
Ouch. Harshness.
But meanwhile, there is, you know, there's Michelle Alexander out there whose book, The New Jim Crow, should be required reading of anybody who actually wants to know why we are where we are and how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
And she published an article in The Nation. The Nation published an article of hers that's basically a condensation of some of that book called Why Hillary Clinton Does Not Deserve the Black Vote.
I heard about that.
And even after penning the article about Bernie Sanders' reparations problem, Ta-Nehisi Coates turned around and endorsed him.
Endorsed?
Senator Sanders.
Okay.
So,
We're still trying to figure out about the trickle down economics, because that people fought in that lie. They bought the lie of, like I said, 40 acres to the mule. They bought the lie of reconstruction. And thank you for that part that segment that you did on Garfield. I had no idea.
Oh, go watch that and then dig deeper. I'm looking forward to reading more and learning more about that particular moment in history, because, you know, I knew that the federal government had run away from Reconstruction.
Oh yeah.
By the election of 1880, the Civil War had been over for 15 years, but in the South it was far from over. And that's during the period of the reactionary insurgency to which the federal government largely surrendered.
And you know what? I actually have been working on a paper about that very subject, about how the federal government, and I've been working on a thesis on this, and basically my thesis is about is how the federal government has been complacent. Has been largely responsible, if not totally responsible, for how African Americans, for the current state of African Americans in this country, especially when it comes to Black Lives Matter. I mean, when you have a woman like Ida B. Wells, who went to the president, or tried to get to the president, in order to stop lynching. Because she found out that you know, she was like a lot of middle class Black people are today when it comes to when a Black person gets killed. Well, they must have been doing something to deserve it, because nobody just gets killed for no reason until her best friend was lynched, who was a fine upstanding citizen. He had his own business. And why was he lynched? Because he dared have compete with a white business owner. How dare he? So she made this a cause for the rest of her life. And of course, because she stood up and spoke out, she was shunned and not, you know, and talked about and just crazy stuff. Most people are Black folks. Something I but that's, I mean, when you have the federal government not do anything, you know, just basically, like you said, turn tail and running from the South. But they really think these people fought to keep black people as slaves. Do they really think by leaving they were going to be okay? Everybody's going to sit in the South and hold hands and say, clean fucking by ya? I don't think so. But where was the government? Where was our protection? Where was our due process? And we're still waiting for our due process, Bob?
Well, sure, and that's and I mean that's why I'm out there, and I would like to get her on the program, Michelle Alexander, because she ties it all you know, her thesis is the new Jim Crow, and you know, things like redlining, unequal access to lending, no matter even if the if all the financial numbers work out, you know, the way they should,
right?
Educational access. You know, it's always the poor school. It's always the poor schools that are almost always disproportionately black populated that take it on the chin. And you know, then there's Flint.
Oh yeah, by the way, there's Flint.
And I give Hillary credit for this much. She's right. If that had been Grosse Pointe or Bloomfield Hills, it never would have been permitted to happen.
It just wouldn't have happened. Like, how many days did he get? 30 days in jail for poisoning. How many people?
300,000.
Okay.
And most of those were poor folks. Because we damn sure don't have 300,000 rich people in West Virginia.
Nope.
Those were people, you know. Those were people of color. Those were people in poverty. Those were people up hollers. And then there's the overlooked fact that was 300,000 people on a public water system. I can take you to places in West Virginia where the water's still not okay because people are dealing with poisoned water supplies from things like mine drainage and fallout. Sure. But, you know, we are as ignorable as Flint was.
Mm-hmm. And then about
uranium mine tailings. Yum.
Yummy. So, like, what's happening out here at Porter Ranch? Now, all these people are up in arms in Porter Ranch, but the thing is about in South LA and different parts of Los Angeles where, you know, poor people live. They have industrial plants, you know, spewing, poisoning the air with the battery things. And these people have been fighting, asking for years to have something done about it. Years. But then the white folks up in Porter Ranch, they start boo-hooing.
Right. And 6,000 people was the last number I heard have been temporarily evacuated.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to feel just fine when they say, no, you people can go home now.
Mm-hmm. They evacuated those people.
And it was a big, big deal because the senior vice president of gas operations for SoCal Gas, Jimmy Cho, has said, we have temporarily controlled the natural gas flow from the leaking well and begun the process of sealing the well and permanently stopping the leak.
Mm-hmm.
They say they may finally have it permanently sealed in the next few days.
Wow, isn't it amazing what money can do?
This Huffington Post article on it that our buddy Cindy in the Great Northwest sent me shows a graphic of how much estimated methane has been released by the leak as of February 1st. to wit, 91,000 metric tons. If you put it right over downtown LA, with which obviously you're familiar, the circumference of the sphere would be 6,530 feet. It would be 1,000 feet higher than the U.S. Bank Tower.
Nice.
And the volume would be, let's see, that's hundreds, thousands, 4,745,621,096 cubic feet.
I'm about as math talented as you are, Bob, but even I know that's a lot.
The methane that has been allowed to leak is the equivalent in CO2 terms to the exhaust from 1,666,737 passenger vehicles driven for 1 year. It is the equivalent of 2,837,634 tons of garbage sent to a landfill. And here's one that resonates with me. Here's what's been released over Southern California. The equivalent of 8,504,759,398 pounds of burnt coal.
Yummy.
It's the equivalent of 2.1 coal-fired power plants operating for 1 year. Yeah.
Wow.
The energy usage of 722,354 homes for 1 year. Yeah.
Yep.
And here's the fun part. Somewhere along the way, because even though you're California and I'm West Virginia, some things operate along similar lines. Somewhere along the way, that gas company is going to go to your public service commission and ask its ratepayers to take it on the chin for what they themselves did.
Well, one of the things that they were talking about on the news the other day just about that was the fact that the problem was that people were getting their gas bills to live in Porto Ranch, and their gas bills were doubled.
Oh! Speaking of bills, did you see that one little story, Tracy, about a little something that went down up in Cleveland?
No.
The family of Tamir Rice has received a $500 ambulance bill for transporting his body after the Cleveland police murdered him in cold blood.
Okay. I'm done.
Did I just ruin supper?
No, because I'm already done eating. They sent him, not only was it a bill, but it was a bill for $500. Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking for the details here.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to Google that shit.
Yep. $500 ambulance bill charged to Tamir Rice's estate. There's some good news though. There really is. There's some good news. It was withdrawn. ABC News reporting. The estate of Tamir Rice will not be required to pay a $500 ambulance bill for which the city of Cleveland, Ohio, had filed a claim in court.
Wait. They
try
to sue them?
Well, yeah, they filed a claim against his estate. Just like the Chicago cop who is going to sue the estate of the young man that he blew away in cold blood. Cleveland officials said today the bill had been automatically generated and that the claim has now been closed. Because, you know, these things just happen, you know, automatically. Jennifer in Australia just said, oh my fucking no. I'm done too, Tracy. Wow, I can't breathe. Now my heart is bleeding. And then Jennifer, when I got to the good news, said, phew, inhale, breathe.
Breathe.
Exhale.
Exhale.
Yeah. Woo. But she says the fact that the bill was even issued, that happens automatically. Yeah, that's just like when they say, the gun just went off.
Right.
It's amazing how many awful things in this country seem to happen spontaneously. And yet a good thing, like, say, Ted Cruz spontaneously combusting, never does.
The gun, I think my personal favorite is the gun just went off. That's, guns don't kill people. People kill people. People with guns kill people.
Yeah.
If you didn't have a gun, you couldn't kill people.
Can you? Now, I mean, you know where I am religiously, right?
Are you even religious at all? You just kind of like whatever.
Yeah, don't have much for it.
Okay, it's like and right.
So, can you imagine what a religious man I would become if all of a sudden Ted Cruz just went poof, and there was nothing left but a little greasy spot, and a big voice came down out of the sky and said, now stop lying about me hating all these people. I don't want to do that again. Man, I would be in a church so fast. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Bless your holy name.
I think you and a whole lot of other people. Because... like you said, I'm tired of these people saying that Jesus hates me because I'm black, because I'm a lesbian, because I got a cab, because I live in California.
Oh, and hey, our religious hate bill passed in the West Virginia House of Delegates today, Tracy.
What is that?
It's a conscience bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it passed like 73-26, and it means that if somebody, let's say 911 gets called and somebody's laying on the ground, dying, and the EMT suspects them of being an abomination unto the eyes of the Lord God Almighty. They can say it violates my religious principles to save this homo's life. Let him die.
So, yet another reason why I'm not leaving California.
I would stay right where I am if I were you. And by the way, I have another question coming in from Jennifer. She says, okay, Bob, the adrenaline has stopped pooling. Good. That's a good thing. But before Tracy hangs up, can we have a brief food porn digression? How goes her ice cream making with the new machine? It's 88 where you are. We can have an ice cream update. Because it's probably 88 where Jennifer is, too. And, screw you, Bob, where it's, 12 where you... Hey, I like ice cream no matter the temperature. I'd love to have some now.
I'm actually considering something with chocolate, bananas, and strawberries.
That would work. You could almost call that like, if you did like a ripple, it could be like a banana split ice cream.
Yeah, something. I've been having, but now my latest fascination, though, is with blueberries. Oh, no, with mangoes. And so it's like, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that one.
Oh, peach mango would be lovely.
Ooh. Pineapple mango.
Oh, absolutely. But my personal favorite, orange pineapple.
Well, yeah, there's that too. So it's one of those, it's like, see, right now, as much as I'm loving ice cream, I'm really trying to do that clean eating like you saw with my... my chicken soup, chicken sausage and kale soup with carrot noodles.
That was just pretty.
Isn't that pretty? It was so good.
Oh, I'm gonna show that. I'm gonna show that that photograph to Agnes, and I imagine she's gonna get real excited.
Well, it's one of those things, and you know how long it took me to make? 20 minutes.
Unfair.
20 minutes. It was, and actually, I take that back. It took 15 because see, the recipe calls for it to be like 30 minutes or 25 minutes or so. That's because it calls for a sausage that hasn't been cooked yet. I had already made my sausage.
Oh, now see, Agnes made us a big pot of crock pot potato soup the other day.
Yum.
Yeah, and as a last minute moment of inspiration, up here at the Wiggling Pig, they've got a meat department and they grind their own sausage about once a week.
Ah.
And so she crumbled up some of that sausage and fried it and added that into the potato soup. Oh, stop it.
Oh my God.
And by the way, Jennifer tells me if you start thinking peach mango, Jennifer says, "Oh my God, peach mango is king with a raspberry sauce." Oh, Jennifer, I think you got her.
Stop it! She got me. She had me. Wow. Well, raspberry sauce. Yes. See, these are all these things that I'm looking forward to make because we're in the, you know, we're going to be moving. And so Jan is having me, you know, box up the, not so much because I got really pissy with her because she said my unnecessary kitchen stuff. And I said, there's not a damn thing in my kitchen that's unnecessary. How dare you? So she backpedaled.
Ooh.
And said, I meant what I meant to say.
Yeah, right, yeah. Wait, did she misspoke like Gloria Steinem did?
That dinosaur needs to go. Don't get me started on her white privilege, feminazi ass. I'm not even going to go there with her. Because she doesn't think black women can be feminine. Idiot. What was I saying? Oh, about my so let's talk about food, good food stuff. So she rephrased it and said stuff that you're not going to use within the next 2 months. And I had to think hard. So like my cake decorating stuff, the stuff that I know I'm not going to use right away because I just don't have the time to use it. But her and Alex are starting to pack. Of packing up of the house because unfortunately for Alex I have before he moved in I had basically his room was my office / storage room for my baking stuff,
otherwise known as Tim's room.
Yes better known as Tim's room. Yes. And so I had shelves in there with all my cooking stuff and I never did anything about it, so it drives them crazy. Especially like when I want to cook something and I remember that there's certain dishes in his dead room and he just looks at me like, I know. So, yes. So, we are packing up stuff and all that. But the things that I'm definitely keeping out are my wok, my spiralizer, my very expensive blender, Vitamix, my Vitamix blender. You know, the essentials. Because every morning for breakfast, I have been making myself smoothies. I cannot believe how much money I'm saving myself by not going to Jamba Juice.
Oh, just by making your own?
Yeah. So, so every morning I have a banana and strawberry and blueberry smoothie with kale and spinach and almond coconut milk.
That sounds pretty yummy.
Oh, it's, you know what? And this is, I'm still getting into, prepare. Actually, what I have been doing is I get the plastic Ziploc bags, the freezer ones, and I prep all of that stuff for like a week or two. So I have little frozen, I have the bags, and I put my fruit and my green stuff and
all that. And so the only thing I had to do in the morning is pick it up the freezer, throw it in the blender, and add my protein powder and my liquid, and voila, breakfast.
Voula, as we say around hereabouts.
Did I say that one more time?
Yeah, voula.
Okay. Well, see, and like I said, I am determined. I have to lose this weight. I can't be this heavy anymore. Everybody that's overweight knows that you just got to lose weight. It's just a matter of doing it and saying, okay, I can do this. I don't really want to do this because food is just so damn good and so wonderful. And unfortunately, when you don't have a lot of money, the only thing you can do is eat.
Well, and what busts me, Tracy, is the lack of the lack of much in the way of exercise alternatives around here. I keep promising myself that someday I'm going to go up the road and get a membership at the gym up by the Wiggling Pig, and you know they'll give you a key and you can go and work out any time, day or night. So you know, wouldn't it be great to turn off the mic here, jump in the car, and go up and do some stair climber, treadmill, weightlifting, whatever, immediately after the program.
I mean, that's... You have that kind of
energy. I'm sorry, what?
Like you have that kind of energy.
Well, that's part of it. But I like to think that I could talk myself into it. Yeah, that's an evil laugh, Tracy.
At the end, there was a snort in there, too, if you heard that.
I got it. Ye of little faith. Little faith.
I'm going through the same thing as
I just need to shed about 50 pounds. That's all.
Look, I would be happy with 50. 50 would still, I would still be overweight, but at least I won't be having to walk sideways to get through a door. Not that I am not that big. I don't need a seatbelt extension to fit in the plane seat. It is kind of tight. I ain't gonna lie on that. It is kind of tight. I'm not gonna lie on that, but it is not required. I just want to be able to go to the restroom and not have to use the handicap stall. How about that?
There's a winner. Yeah.
Well, it gets to that point where just walking, I'm out of breath. That's just ridiculous. The one thing, I have lost like almost 10 pounds. And Jan's like, you do realize, because, you know, once I gained all this weight, I never snored before because I've gained so much weight. I now snore. And thunderous.
Well, I need to drop those 50 pounds, and I need to lose the nicotine, Jones.
Wait, you smoke?
Oh yeah.
Oh, see, all these years, Bob, I never knew you smoked.
Oh, are you kidding? How many? You must not have been listening all the times I talked about what a little nicotine junkie I am.
I've never. I honest to goodness did not know you smoked.
It's my last vice. I mean, I shed those 50 pounds. The diabetes goes away.
You're diabetical as well, and you're smoking. Do you want to lose your foot, a foot or a toe, what?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I need to deal with the Jones. But it's
hard. Look, we're both addicted to food. We are both. We you know, hi, my name is Tracy. And I'm a foodaholic.
Yeah, I've realized that that I am powerless over yummy food, and my life has become unmanageable. Yes.
It has become unmanageable. And see, what sucks about being addicted to food is because you got to eat.
The funny thing about metabolic disorders is that I'm always... And I'll bet the diabetics in the audience can probably identify with this. I am always hungry.
Always.
And you know, we joke about the ice cream and stuff. I can't tell you I can't tell you the last time I ate ice cream. Because the sugar-free crap tastes exactly like that. It's crap.
It's just...
There's no there.
I just... When I have attempted, and I'm like, you know what? This is bullshit, and it'll just piss me off, but then I want to go eat the real thing, and even more so of it. So... We were at an all-you-can-eat buffet, and it was really actually a good one. I mean, they actually had, you know, it was the Hibachi Grill, and they had all sorts of Asian stuff and sushi and stuff like that. And I stuck with some sushi. I did ate some sushi. I did have some noodles. You got to have some noodles, but mostly fruit, and I had a salad. And I felt fine. I haven't had a soda in 2 weeks.
No, yeah, huge. I don't drink pop. I don't do that either.
You mean soda water?
No. Yeah, okay.
Now you guys say pop.
Are we going to do this? Are we going to go through this one too? This geographical nightmare. I haven't. No. I have what I do drink. I don't drink sugary beverages at all. I drink one thing.
It was rum?
No, I wish. This is another one of those unpaid product placements. I drink Canada Dry, sugar-free Diet Canada Dry ginger ale.
Okay.
Because it's the one beverage, diet beverage I've found that I can actually abide the taste of.
Well, I've actually stuck with just plain old soda water. Because it's not so much the taste for me anymore, it's the fizzle and the tickling of the nose.
You know, one thing I got turned on to while I was over in Germany is a mixture of about half and half soda water and apple juice.
Oh, the poor man's Martinelli's.
Let's see, what was the German word? Apfelsaft. Apfelsaft, and just refreshing, crisp, clean, lovely.
And see, that's those things that you do, because I was, like I said, I was looking at myself the other day. I mean, my pants are beginning to fall off me, which is a nice thing. But it's just, it is hard, Bob. It is hard. And Jan, God love her, but she does not. There's not knockdown drag out fights, but she does get a little pissy when I cook certain things because, I make kale. First of all, she doesn't fuck with kale. She's like, that's just stupid. But she's like, if you cook it longer, I'll eat it. I said, baby, the reason why you like you cook your vegetables to death. I hear them screaming. There is absolutely no nutritional value left in the vegetables after you cook them. It's like they're saying, why, Jan, why? You're supposed to be using us to get to have nutrients and stuff that's good for you, but you're cooking the fuck out of us. Stop it. I've heard them screaming that. So I'm slowly. I did get her to eat. I have gotten her to eat fresh spinach, and I just thought, spinach is not
rinse that baby. Rinse the bejesus out of that baby spinach.
Man, oh man. Because if you get a call from me and I'm in the hospital, and you'll say, Tracy, I told you what the last time we spoke. Did I or did I not tell you to wash the fuck out of that spinach? And I did, and so if I don't wash it, it's on me.
I tell you, I love baby spinach and onions, like slivered, braised in a hot skillet, a little bit of olive oil,
and some garlic. Don't forget
until
the garlic
until it begins to wilt. I can go crazy
Mr.
on
Wilson,
that.
You know,
and,
I
and I could, and you know, I mean, that's the thing. My diet is not that bad. I could eat freshly cooked turnip, kale, collard, dandelion, you name it, greens, probably every day of my life, and be very, very happy about it. Of course, we got to have a little hog jowl in there, but you know.
What about smoked turkey? How about that?
You know, that would probably give the smoke flavor. Absolutely.
Not probably. You're talking to a person who grew up eating hog balls and chitlins and ham hocks.
See, okay? I'm one of those people that does not run away from a plate of chitlins.
Neither do I. But see, you just can't fuck with everybody's chitlins now. Come on, player.
I know.
Because everybody don't. And see, I can honestly say that I haven't had chitlins since my grandmother died because she was the only one
knew
that
how
I
to fix them.
You know, you just, there's just certain things.
When they're good, they're great. Yeah. When they're bad, oh.
I love me some chitlins. And I promise you, if I ever run up on somebody that knows what the fuck they're doing, I will. Now, can't even.
No, see, I found that person.
But see, you're in West Virginia.
No. This has nothing to do with West Virginia. It was a couple of 3 or 4 years ago when I was down, in the Gullah Geechee country. On the Georgia
South
coast.
South Carolina.
Georgia.
Okay.
And once a year, they let one and all out onto Sapelo Island. And there were people doing chitlins there. And oh my dear
God.
Heavenly God. And fried fish. I mean, you remember hotter than fish grease? The fish
yes.
grease was hot.
Hot.
And oh,
didn't I get the golden toaster?
You got the golden toaster that night for the hotter than fish grease.
See, fried fish to me is just did I send you pictures of the fish, the catfish that I had in New Orleans?
No.
I'm going to go search my phone, and I'll send it to you. Now, you talk about food porn. Let me tell you.
Oh, no, you were in the home of food porn.
So, you know, there's a thing about catfish. You know, well, we both know about fish, and there's a certain way you have to fry the fish, and it has to be a certain consistency, because nothing worse.
And there's a certain way you got to clean that catfish.
Right. And there's nothing worse than biting into catfish that the outside is crisp, but then the inside is too thick. So you're actually...
No, I know.
It was like having a catfish potato chip or something.
I love me some catfish, but I got converted a couple of years ago. That was my favorite freshwater fish.
That it had to replace by
walleye.
What you call me?
Walleye. No, walleye from walleye from up north around the around the Great Lakes. Yeah, you. Although here over at Tamarack, their signature dish is a pan-seared trout fillet served with lemon brown butter, and it is not to be beaten.
I don't like trout.
Oh, you'd like this trout.
Well, Jan has been telling, because we had a fish war the other day. She wanted, I'm trying to stay away from too much fried food. And I actually really haven't had any fried food in the last couple of weeks. But they finally opened a fish market, a black fish market in the valley. And so she had mentioned it, that she wanted fish. And I was going to stop there and get her some sand dabs. And then I went to Rouse because I decided, well, I'll get the fish there, but I'm going to make my own side. And so my food porn for that day, I did my own coleslaw, which I used, you know, red and green cabbage, apples, and carrots. And made my own mayonnaise, blah, 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 blah. And then I roasted broccoli florets. So I'm like, okay. But so I'm walking past the seafood counter at Rouse, and they had large shrimp, $8 a pound. Bob?
Well, that's like stealing them.
Bob, I couldn't say no. I'm like,
well, no,
okay.
Hell no.
And so, because had I went to the fish place, it would have cost me a hell of a lot more than $8 a pound for the shrimps. And I bought Jazz. They didn't have Sandass, but they pretty close, you know, a country cousin or whatever, filet of sole. You know, not Sandass, but, and I was going to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I come home, and she's like, but I wanted that. I said, but baby, we're trying to save money, and I'm trying to stay away from, you know, eating stupid stuff. So she relented. So, and she said, well, don't make the fish. Save the fish for later. Just do the shrimp. I'm like, okay. I didn't fry it. So what I did with the shrimp, I did it with olive oil, lemon zest, and garlic, and a little salt and pepper.
No
and
complaints. No complaints.
Except for my wife.
Didn't like?
She's like, well, because I really had myself set for this and that and this.
No. Okay. So I can understand that. You know, you want, not, you're expecting one thing.
Yeah,
and
you want
get
what you want. But well, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You see the movie Harlem Nights, right?
Oh, sure.
So what? You know, have my mouth all fixed.
By the way, you got fan mail, Tracy. Danny just wrote in from Louisiana, Stan. He said, please tell Tracy, one of her fans is so glad to hear her. I love her and the conversation when you two talk. So,
thank you.
You are beloved. Meanwhile, Carol Baker tells me if you take the catfish and ice it down with lemon and hot sauce before you dredge it in cornmeal and lemon pepper and garlic seasoning, it is flat killer deep fried. And see,
say that one more time so I can sear it into my memory bank.
Okay, so you ice down your catfish with lemon and hot sauce.
Okay.
And then you dredge it in your cornmeal and your lemon pepper and garlic seasoning. And then you deep fry it.
Because you know Mama got a deep fryer, right?
Oh, I have no doubt. Yes.
You know Mama got a deep fryer. You know.
Oh.
Mama. You know. See. My dream, Bob, is that one day you make it out here to California, and I get to cook for you.
We will go and play together in the kitchen.
Yes, we will. See, this is what we can do because, see, I have a friend who's from the Midwest, and she's one of those people that does the app. She has that old hand crank for the apples to make the apple pie and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said what we're going to do is we're going to have a cooking day at my house. And I said it was, you know, the southern, I don't know what Californian cuisine is other than it's a hodgepodge of everything that is good and food and yummy and more fresh because we have, you know, the greatest produce in the world. So, you know, I can just do stuff that, you know, and then she has, and then you come with that true southern stuff. I'm just doing it via, you know, Mississippi. Let's see, where am
I promise if this ever happens, Tracy, I will leave you with a big old tub of North Alabama hot slaw and a big old tub of North Alabama tartar sauce. And
the tartar sauce is for Jan. You could, I don't fuck with tartar sauce.
Well, you don't know. This is not disgusting like tartar sauce is disgusting. Its base is
great. Is it mayonnaise base?
Its base is ground cabbage.
Okay.
It's got a little mayo. Okay. It's got a little mayo and a little bit of sour cream in it.
Okay.
But just to provide a binder, and there's dill and dill cubes and lemon juice and onion and green pepper.
Okay. See, these are those things because, see, I love to cook and I love to eat, and which is, and Jan cooks, you know, she gets the Jewish stuff that she made. What are those potato pancakes?
Latkes.
Latkes, yes. She makes those from scratch. Yes, she does. She made me, one time when I was six, yes, my wife made me matzo ball soup. Why would I marry,
I Jones for good matzo ball soup.
I told her it was a requirement. If I was going to marry a Jew, you better be able to fucking make some matzo ball soup or I was...
this ain't what? Happening.
What's the point? What is the... It would be like her not marrying, you know, saying, well, because, you know, I cook, you know, even though I've never lived in the South other than to visit, but that's where my family hails from. Like I said, Mississippi, we got Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas, and I think Georgia. So, God only knows.
No, you
but
got
mostly we,
yeah, you've got no, you got all the, you got all the food culture ingredients there.
Oh, in Texas. So, you know, that's how I learned how Texas style barbecue. So, you know, the first time, she had never had Southern food until we got together. And she loved me and cursed me all at the same time. Cause like she had never had gumbo. She had never had greens. She had never had red beans and rice. She had never had a hoe cake. You know what a hoe cake is, right?
Yeah, hoe gotta eat too.
Hoe gotta eat too.
I'm ashamed. Yes, I know from hoe cakes, yes.
A hoe gotta eat too. And so these are those things that we do because, you know, cooking, the only thing poor folks had was to cook. And on top of the fact that poor folks had to be in just genius.
Yeah, oh yeah, when all you got left is the pig's guts and you still managed to figure out a way to make those damn things delicious.
Delicious.
And you know this I mean, I'm not that far. My mother, this very house that I live in, when she was young and before she moved to Alabama with my father, all the way up till then, they would raise a beef on this acre and a pig every year.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be, you know, and the weather was not what the weather is now. I mean, it got cold in October. And that was hog killing weather.
Yep.
Got to wait till it's cold. And they'd kill the hog. And they used everything but the oink.
But the oink. Look, you're talking to a person who's
My grandmother had a recipe for souse that was souse? Renowned around here.
You say souse or
sauce? Souse. S-O-U-S-E. Souse.
What the hell? Okay, what is souse?
Let me put it in Southern California terms. It is a rustic country pork pate. You could put a little sliver of my grandmother's souse on a great goddamn big white plate and doodle on it with some ketchup or some mustard or something like they do and sell it for $35 a plate in some restaurant in L.A.
Yeah, sounds about right. Souse. So, okay, it's
head cheese, absolutely.
Look, you're talking to a person who they actually sold this. I haven't seen it in a million years, but chicken feet.
Sure.
And that's what my mother would make the chicken broth with.
Yeah, that's eating everything but the cackle.
Uh-huh. I mean, since my mom, you know, my mom moved to North Carolina, God bless her. And she actually knows her husband. They do the same thing you were just talking about, raise the pig and slaughter it and use everything but the oink. She actually sent me a picture of her killing a chicken and almost passed out because, oh my God.
Oh, no. My mother went out and killed a chicken every Sunday after church.
My mother's from here, Bob.
but she didn't lose her raisin.
But she was born and raised here. We never slaughtered chickens in the backyard, Bob. Our chicken came like it was, like God put it on the earth in cellophane.
In plastic bags at Ralph's, exactly.
At Ralph's, for God's sake. What the hell?
But she knew. She knew. She knew. Yep.
She was complaining that the other day because the shells on the eggs were too thin, and because they needed to give the chickens some, like, whatever for some vitamin to make the egg shells thicker. I'm like, this conversation has to end, and it has to end now.
You are violating my basic sense of civilization.
I cannot handle this.
Well, see, when I looped back through where I grew up in Alabama back at the end of September, early October, I stopped at my favorite barbecue joint, and Ferg and I just gorged ourselves. It was embarrassing. My blood sugar wasn't measurable by my glucometer for about a week. Like I said, you stick the strip in, you put the little dot of blood on it, and the meter just goes WTF. And, you know, but one of the other things, so the national fried chicken franchise Popeyes, right?
Okay, yeah.
Well, I love Popeyes fried chicken. I do. But what I love best of all, and only a few of their operations, only a few stores still do it. Popeye, you know, that spicy batter that they use for their fried chicken?
Right.
Yeah, they do it with chicken livers.
Oh, for real?
Oh yeah, and one of the places and one of the places they still do that is at the Popeyes in Northwest Alabama, and we stopped in there and got enough to keep us in fried chicken livers all the way back to West Virginia. You know, just cruising up the interstate, and I look at him and go, hand me another, get out another box, son. And then Carol has passed along to me her recipe for hush puppies.
Oh,
and I'm gonna copy that and shoot that over to you because Mama got a deep fryer.
Mama got a deep fryer.
Yeah, it'll get exciting.
Can't do hush puppies and scrimp without a deep fryer. You can do a makeshift. Now, there is such a thing as a makeshift deep fryer. Now, you can.
No, you can work with an oven. You can work with a good iron skillet.
The iron skillet and
a willingness to have the living be Jesus splattered out of you and cry and carry on and scream periodically. Then, yep.
Yeah. And a wire basket. These things can be done, or even using a wok. And I know we only got a couple of minutes. I'm going to end this with the ultimate, not so much in food porn, but the ultimate in ways to prepare your food porn. I found my oven because, you know, we're moving and we had to buy all new appliances.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, when I saw it, it's called a Duo Flex oven by Samsung. I want it, but I still got to do some research on it. Because it's just a thing of beauty, but even, you know, I'm not a sucker. It's a 3-in-1 oven, Bob. So basically, okay, let me breathe. You can take breathing. So there's a divider in the oven. So you can do three things. You can cook two things at the same temperature, two things at the same time at a different temperature. Or remove the shelves and cook one big thing at one time.
Too fun.
Oh, no, I'm not done.
No?
There's five burners on this, Bob. The middle burner has its own griddle. Or you could just use it as, you know, a regular, you know, burner. And then they have an attachment for your wok, for the burner. There's one burner that has like 16,000 BTUs that boils your water in like 2 minutes. There's a full dehydrator, Bob. Yes.
All on this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, send me a link on Facebook, Tracy. I want to see this. I want to see this marvel that has come to pass.
Bob, when I saw it, I told my friend who's a chef. And I asked her, has she seen the picture of it? She's like, I wanted to have sex with it. It is the most beautiful thing. I would I mean, when I saw it, I seriously almost cried. I really did. I never knew that, because I was looking for a double oven anyway, because I'm like the other day, Jan and I were both cooking something and I couldn't finish cooking what I had to cook because she was cooking what she was cooking in the stove, in the oven. And I'm like, that's it. I want a double stove. I mean, double oven. I don't care. So I was looking actually for the double oven, which the double ovens are two separate ovens.
Right. Yeah, that, I'm familiar with.
But the thing is, on the freestanding range, those, the double ovens get too low to the ground. And I'm, you know, yes, I'm getting, and I'm not trying to, you know, be on my knee. It's basically almost like a broiler, but bigger. But this is the one oven. So you don't have to, like, stoop on the ground to, Bob, I just.
You're about to rapture into pure 110% unadulterated bliss, Tracy.
It was just, I'm telling you, when the man showed me that stove, I said, this is it. I have died and gone to heaven. And when Jan asked me how much it was, she was going to kill me. But I said, baby, just a plain old ugly stove, regular stove, is like $900. Seriously, I did not realize. I mean, I've lived in the same apartment. I haven't had to buy any.
No, you haven't been out pricing this stuff, have you? No.
No. So I was like, God damn. So this one, it was $1,200, and I'm like, what? Because the KitchenAid double oven was like $2,400. Of course, I had to.
Oh, you pay a lot for that KitchenAid label.
But I just couldn't justify that because I could buy a car. I could buy a car for $1,200, but I just can't. I'm not rolling like that. I'm not really rolling like that to pay $1,200 for a stove, but it's beautiful, Bob. It's those things that you think, why the fuck would you spend that kind of money on a stove? But for the way I cook and how much I cook, it is a sound investment. Especially when, like I said, when I can cook two or three things at the same time, under same time with different temperatures. Because the only other way you could do that is if you had those stoves, you know, that are built in the wall. And we're not remodeling the kitchen to do
No. Hey, I got a comment for you real quick coming in from Jennifer. She says, Tracy's wife is a lucky woman. Her enthusiasm is adorable. By the way, California food to me is sand dabs. Had them once in a green grape beurre blanc and have savored it for years. What the hell, Tracy, is a sand dab anyway?
Fuck if I know.
You just get told to go buy them.
I just get told. And the thing is about sand dabs, and that's why Jan was kind of pissy with me about it. She's like, because they're not easy to find, apparently. It's not like they're a delicacy, but, you know, like when I went to Ralph's, it's very rare that you'll see sand dabs at the grocer. So,
no, I'm running to Wikipedia right now. It's a species of flatfish.
Okay, yes.
Medium sized, light brown color, mottled brown or black, occasionally with white or orange spots. Endemic to the northern Pacific Ocean from the Sea of Japan to the coast of California.
Yay!
Opportunistic predator feeding on a variety of crustaceans as well as smaller fish, squid, and octopi.
That's plural for octopus, y'all.
Yeah, that's right. Found on menus in the Monterey Bay and San Francisco area. More difficult to find in Southern California restaurants and markets. Very affordable and quite delicious, even though some regard it as a delicacy. Also popular in Oregon and Washington, where it can be found more readily.
Because it's northern.
Never heard of them before in my life. But
see,
they do kind of
look,
but they look like a sole. They do. They look like a sole.
Yeah, see. Because I'm not a fish connoisseur, obviously, like my wife is. Because, you know, growing up, we didn't. I tell people, you know, we were the only kind of steak we had was smothered.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The best it's
not,
story
it's not hamburger. It's chopped steak. Damn it.
It's chopped steak. Get it right. The best story ever, because my mom grew up pretty much, you know, broke. Not broke, but, you know, it wasn't like they even knew they were broke until she went, her and my dad were courting. And so my grandfather was a butcher. See, my dad's family was very much black middle class, solid middle class. I mean, they actually went on vacation and stuff like that. And so the first time she had ever had a real steak was at my dad's house. Now, this is talking about, you know, the person that grew up eating steak with a fork. There was no knife involved in the steaks at my mom's house. So here she goes, and they put this big old hunk of meat and knives and forks. And she just sat there because she didn't know what to. She did not know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to watch. Other people.
Yeah, just kind of wait and see what everybody else is doing.
Uh-huh.
Well, Tracy, we have run flat out of time. Now, dinner here was mashed potatoes and banquet sorry man Salisbury steak and gravy. I love reading the ingredients. I love reading the ingredients there where it says textured vegetable protein. So I'm not, you know, I'm feeling kind of vegan right now. Yeah, I know. Jennifer says I'm fucked. We'll never get sand dabs down here in Australia. Yeah, damn.
Well, that means she starts to come and visit down here in Australia.
You know, yeah. Pardon me while I'm all broken up. But we got to get out of here, Tracy. We do.
But anyway, you guys.
Yeah,
bye.
we're a minute past. Tracy, have a lovely evening.
You do, my dear. And actually, I think I'll be calling tomorrow for Friday on the front porch.
I hope you'll join in. Bye now.
Guys, take care. Bye.
And that's right. Friday on the front porch comes our way tomorrow. And hopefully we'll be able to knock out the $360 or so that we need to raise just to finish the week to the good and pay bills and all that lovely stuff. So, everybody have a good evening. I got to get out of the way. Malloy's on the way over at his place. Y'all have a lovely evening. And sorry about the podcast. Pass it. I'll need to put a message out about the podcast. And I'm going to try to get this business with the production computer sorted out. It worked for a little bit, and then it just, you know, died. Anyway, have a good evening. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.